picture of outline, lay all my cards on the table, and then find Job chapter 10, just before Psalms. You know Job has lost his children, lost his financial income, lost his wife, in terms of their communication, and lost his health. Well, that's a fine kettle of fish that he's in, for sure. And he has three friends, Mr. Eliphaz, Mr. Bildad. And they come to him and say to him, the reason you've got these problems is because you have sinned against God, and God is just, and right is punishing you. So stop lying. I hope that we will not do that with other of the people that we know. Unless they got so stinking drunk they hit a tree and wrap themselves around it. But even then, we need to have a little compassion on people. But he gets from his friends legalistic Christianity. Like, clean your life up and everything will be fine. Don't blame God. And Job, though he's not privy to the first two chapters, knows he hasn't done anything that deserves these kinds of punishments. So that's his situation. And so he gives vent to his feelings. By the way, feelings are never sinful. Let me say that categorically. Feelings are never sinful. Now, they may be based on sinful presuppositions and sinful thoughts, but the feelings themselves suggest how we feel, it's how we respond. It's not sinful to have a feeling of abandonment or being lost or confusion. But what are those feelings based on? Because there's been boo-boo research and plus scripture itself to show that our feelings look like a caboose that are dragged along by our thinking and our behavior and thoughts. So if you have a bad feeling, examine your thoughts and what you've been doing more than, oh, I shouldn't feel like this. And God can handle our honest feelings. Since he knows our thoughts before we think them, he can handle our feelings. And he wants truth as we see it in our life, in our prayers to him. What could be more terrible than to pray hypocritically? That's one time we don't want to try to play games with God, that's for sure. I mean, even Jesus himself said, why have you forsaken me? Why have you abandoned me? Why do you treat me with contempt? To be forsaken is to be left, holding the bag. And even Jesus had that question. And it's hard to get more honest than that, especially considering it's Jesus who's talking. And so we see Job in his despair. And I pray this morning that me and you, that we would talk honestly with the Lord today. Doing what Peter said, to cast all of our care upon God because he cares about us. So this very afternoon, you can get alone and you can say, Lord, I am very disheartened. Or I don't understand what's happening. What it is you're doing. And then at the top of the outline, as Job lays his cards on the table, he reaches the bottom of his despair. And his despair comes from this. He doesn't have a gracious God to give meaning to his life. His life has no ultimate meaning. There's nothing transcendent going on. I mean, this is really bad for Job, because the God that he does believe in is treating him terribly. So what do modern people do in our culture who don't have a belief in God? Well, they keep busy. And those who were brought up in good families generally will help others. They gotta be happy. Put on a happy face. You remember that? Those lyrics. And be happy. How many parents have said, I don't care what my child does as long as they are happy? I'll tell you what, I care what my children do. I hope what makes them happy pleases God and makes him happy. But we never want to give our children the idea, as long as you're happy, I am happy. Well, whatever makes you happy. And hope for the best. And I have talked to a number of people ready to face death, and they said, my greatest hope is I will go into unconscious sleep and never wake up. C'est la vie. My greatest hope is I will go into an unconscious darkness. And whether we sleep for 10 minutes or 10 hours, we can't tell. The sleep is like that. That's not a very good philosophy to go into eternity on, I can assure you, I think. So, Job is in this despair. And by the way, when Job talks, we've got to remember that he's in pain. He's ashamed. He's a failure. God is against him, and his friends said, you're a sinner, and that's why you earned it. It's great. It's a great way. A lot of times we will say things in despair that we don't really mean. And sometimes if you're talking to somebody who is in pain and in distress, they'll say, God doesn't love me. Or I knew God was like this. Or he set me up. See? And we have to take that into consideration. So Job has a couple of questions. And as we read Job's complaint, don't forget Job chapter 42, verse 7. After Job responds to God coming to him and actually going to court with him, so to speak, God said this after he had spoken to Job, and where were you when I created the stars, the big devil, the little devil, all that. After the Lord had spoken these words to Job, the Lord said to Eliphaz the Temanite, my anger burns against you and against your two friends, for you have not spoken of me what is right, that is suitable and appropriate for the situation, as my servant Job has. So keep that in mind, that when God evaluates Job's complaints and his words, he takes into consideration what's been going on. So we look at chapter 10, and Job asks this question, why do you trouble me? And do you know what it means to be a human being who hears that beer truck in the background and it's coming and it's going to run over you? It could happen at any time, whether you live 26 years or 86 years, it is going to happen. And so he says, why do you trouble me, and can't you put yourself in my position? So in Job 10, 1 through 7, he interested in these two questions. Job starts out in verse 1, I hate and loathe and despise my life. And I will give free utterance to my complaint, and I will speak in the bitterness of my soul. And this is his prayer. Oh God, do not condemn me. Or at least let me know why you contend against me. And then he asks a series of negative questions. That is, he asks questions that deserve a negative answer. Does it seem good to you to oppress and despise the work of your hands and favor the designs of the wicked? No. Have you eyes of flesh? No. Do you see me as man, or do you see as man sees? No. Are your days as the days of a man, and your years as a man's years? That you seek at my iniquity and search for my sin, although you know that I am not guilty and there is none to deliver out of your hand. Now, and God doesn't treat us like that, but in his despair, he complains. And every time we read about Job's complaint, think of what the New Testament says in addressing that particular complaint against God. And I think in careful study, and I hope as we move along, we'll see some of this. At every point, Job's complaints are answered by Christ's life and Christ's teaching. For example, in verse 2, why? It says, do not condemn me. And what does Romans 8, chapter 1 say? But Job complains because he is living as a man without Christ. He's living as a person who does not know the grace of God. You know, we live in the church age. We live in the age of grace. We live with such privileged people to live in this age of after Christ has come. And how many of us have struggled with those questions? Does God know how it feels to live a life in which trouble come, or even our pleasures become short-lived, and they always have a hint of there's going to be a price to pay? At the wedding yesterday, it's a beautiful wedding. It's a in the Cannon Memorial Chapel of the University of Richmond. It was a wonderful, beautiful place. It was hot as hell, but it was wonderful. And the minister alluded to the fact that you guys are going to experience great joy, but there are great responsibilities too. So he said, just don't think it's always going to be peaches and cream. Yeah, everybody. Yeah, that's right. But does the Lord know what it means to be sick, to be tired, to be abandoned, to be misunderstood, to be sorrowful, to have hope and have a dash? Listen to the writer of Hebrews 4. Since then we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus the Son of God. Let us hold fast to our confession. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to feel with us with our weaknesses. Often I've heard people say, God's too busy for my problem. But that is never true. God isn't too busy. Are we never too small? but he can sympathize with our strengthlessness. But he is one who in every respect has been tested and tempted, just like us. Yet he did not sin. So let us then in confidence draw near to the throne of grace. How often have situations come in which we say, I can't even pray. I'm so bitter, I'm so upset. Why should we approach the throne of grace that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in a time of great need? I want to encourage you that when the evil one comes along and accuses you or thinks or says you've been abandoned or you sins of great and you have it pale, that you remember this verse. We do not have a high priest that cannot sympathize with us. If anything we learn from Job is to be honest. And in his honesty in verses 8 through 17, he says, you created me and gave me life. Why did you give me life? Was so I could be miserable? You could hunt me like a lion? Yeah, grace is a very, I'm glad that Brad picked these Psalms, because with that grace, Christianity becomes a terrible existence, a terrible burden. If you read Pilgrim's Progress, if we're not careful, we'll go to Mr. Legality's house, where we labor under trying to please God by denying ourselves. So much so that we give up on Christianity. Because we just are not good enough. We just can't do it. We fell. We just cannot do it. God, He is never satisfied. And this is where Job flounders. Because who wants to live a life where when we look up, all we see is condemnation? That is what his friends have been telling him. God is judging you. And so he appeals to God. Look and listen to his heart as he struggles with these difficulties. Your hands fashioned and made me. And now you have destroyed me altogether. Remember, you have made me like clay, like Adam, like Adam. And now you turn me into dust. Is that what you're going to do, God? Is that the kind of God you are? Did you not pour me out like milk and curl me like cheese? He's talking about the birth. He's talking about the creation of a human being. You know, to make cheese is very difficult. In a sense, you've got to be very, very careful. And cheese that is freshly made, I understand, is soft, just like human flesh. You can press it in and it pops out. It's soft and it's resilient. It's a very beautiful analogy, sperm and the birth creative process and the ovum. It comes together in a beautiful way and creates life. You've clothed me with skin and flesh and you knit me together with bones and sinews. We are wonderful, fearfully and wonderfully made, as the psalm says is true. You've granted me life and steadfast love and you have preserved my spirit. For those of you who are academically inclined a little bit or like to read serious stuff, I recommend books by a guy named David Bentley Hart, H-A-R-T. He is a philosopher from England. He writes about the character of God, and he says this: the wonder of life, your consciousness, you and you, me is me. Where do you think that came from? From chemicals? Our ability to understand and see ourselves. Where does that come from? Consciousness. You are you, me is me. And this is Sunday, it's July 26th. And does this just pop out of nothing, this whole idea of consciousness? For example, he said a computer can never win a chess game. A computer can never win a chess game because a computer can't play a chess game. A computer can win moves and figure out binary possibilities at 100,000 per second possibilities. But they can never play the game because it cannot have self-consciousness, except in science fiction. But in real life, a machine can never fall in love. A machine can never win. Because a machine can never feel. A machine has no consciousness. And I know the writers try to convince us sometimes that we can like be like a boy and be half human and half machine and all that kind of thing. But that's fantasy. But we have self-consciousness. We can win a chess game and we can lose a chess game and we can play and we can love and we can fear and we have terror. That's the gift of God. Those feelings. Don't trust me. Read David Bentley Hart. He's written 3 books about this stuff. And they're not very hard. Just have a dictionary there because he uses man-made words. But he apologizes because he uses these words because they have a nuance, a meaning. So we can have a good day, but what does that mean? When I got married on this day, we know what that means. That's for sure. But you see, when we lose a sense of the graciousness of God, we begin to say this: God, you set me out. The only reason you gave me life was so you could steal it from me. Any doubts of goodness of God? It is no wonder people drink and do drugs and get crazy, have wanton sex and just have pleasure. Because, look, there's no other meaning to our life but to have fun and to have power and to use people and to have authority over people. It's no wonder that people do that. Why? Because they have a sin nature, we have Satan, but also because there's no existential meaning to our life. I mean, so what? So you live 85 years and have a great time and father 400 children, live Pharaoh or something, and you get everything you ever wanted, so what? You're going to be dead. So what? So ask yourself that so what pattern. So you get a good job. So you got good health. So what? See? Because if there's no eternal meaning, then life has no meaning. And we can get meaning temporarily. There are people who I used to be very good friends with, who were soul buddies, but they moved on. And at that time, I thought, boy, this is really good. But it passed on. See? I mean, that can happen. That's not the kind of consciousness and being that Scripture talks about. Because with that ultimate meaning, our life really is absurd. It's ridiculous. It's outrageous. So it's no wonder that guy in Lafayette, Louisiana, got up after watching the movie World War I hour, he killed two girls and shot nine other people and then shot himself. See, I mean, philosophically, why not? What is it? Francis Schaeffer said that a philosophy class he taught in Switzerland, he said, please don't commit suicide during this class. You have signs. And I'm saying that's done in philosophy classes at certain secular schools, because as we get into examining the meaninglessness and the absurdity of our life, it doesn't really make any difference what you did. Anyway, maybe B.F. Skinner was correct. He says it's all conditioned anyway. And so, see, when people begin to believe that kind of lie, then what's the point? Well, the great question in philosophy is, the only question in life is meaningful is, when will you kill yourself? That's the only important question you've got to answer. But we know that Job's problems did have meaning, because God had said, Job's never going to betray me. And Satan said, oh yes he will. I tell you what, give him a bad job, give him bad health, give him a bad family life, and he'll curse you to your face and say you're full of it. And God said, no, not Job. He won't do that. Job doesn't know it, but he's representing God's character. But because he doesn't know the grace of God in his life, and he doesn't trust God, he says this: you granted me life and love and preserved me. Yet these things you hid in your heart, I know that this was your very purpose. You gave me children so you could kill them. You gave me money so you could steal it. And you gave me a wonderful body so you could sin it and break it and make it malfunction. I knew that. That was your very purpose. That is the bottom of the barrel. Because once he gives up on God's goodness, life has no meaning. So he has this idea of God in verse 14. If I sin, you watch me, and you do not acquit me of my iniquity. If I am guilty, woe is me. Even if I am not guilty, I cannot lift up my head. For I am filled with disgrace, and I look on my affliction, and I say, what a crummy body, what a crummy life. I made shipwreck of my faith. And were I to become optimistic, he says in verse 16, you would hunt me like a lion. But we know that this isn't so, don't we? Right? We know this isn't so, because when Jesus went to Levi's house and was reclining at table with tax collectors, the Pharisees grumbled and said, why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners? Jesus said, those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repent. Christ came to die for the ungodly. That's our only qualification. So his complaint is, you hunt me like a lion. I can never get away. You work your wonders and your miracles. You see the sarcasm? You work your miracles against me. You renew your witnesses against me, and I cannot win, and you increase your vexation towards me. Vexing, troubling, sleeplessness, you bring fresh accusations against me. Let me end up by saying this. When we begin to think that we just want God to leave us alone, what do you do when you get tired of it all? I guess we got these things now. I saw people at the wedding yesterday, and they were it's crazy. Even when the guy was preaching, the guy, I didn't feel too bad because they were doing this. Even their communion, the people on there, I thought, it's crazy. I mean, what do you do? Do you just go to bed? Yeah, a lot of people say, the only time I get into peace is sleep. But then there are some people who say, I don't never get into peace when I'm sleeping. They don't want to. They stay out until they can't even hold their eyes up, and then they go to bed. But it's not the story. So. No. I mean, what do you do? Do you watch Star Trek? I don't know. What do you do? Because he asked the question, why don't you leave me alone? Before I go to the land of Mordor, where the shadows lie. So that's what he said. Remember, Ecclesiastes 3, it's a time for every purpose, a time to live, a time to die. He says this, there's a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance. What he's saying is all these very things come to us. So just leave me alone and let me be happy. That's what Psalm 39 verse 13 says. Stay away from me, God, before I go into darkness. But listen carefully to this. This is what the preachers say. If you never remember anything I've said, be sure to remember this. Well, remember this. This is Ecclesiastes 7:14. In the day of prosperity, let us be joyful. And in the day of trouble, consider God has made the one as well as the other. We will never worship God as long as we think God's going to answer all of our prayers. And if we have enough faith, we can have victory every day. Walk in victory. If we think that we will not worship God, we will use Him. But when God allows adversity in our life, then we fear Him and we worship Him. You ever met a proud person? A proud person is a person who everything works. They find a perfect mate. They've got great health. They feel good. They have money. They have hope. And your problem is you don't have enough faith. If they're Christians, they don't say that. Or, well, that's the grace. That's the way the cookie crumbles. Come see, come sign. That's the way things are. Some win, some lose, you know? You can't all win. We need the wisdom of Ecclesiastes 7. Because we will never worship God as long as we've got Him figured out. And we've got the problem. Technique. Why did you bring me out of the womb? Would that I had died before any eye had seen me, and were as though I had not been born. Oh, that I was carried from the womb to the grave. Are not my days few? Then stay away from me, God. Cease and leave me alone that I may find a little cheer before I go. I shall not come back. Before I go to the land of darkness and deep shadow, the land of gloom, like thick darkness, like deep shadow without any order, when light is as thick as darkness. without God. That's what people have to look forward to. It's much like Francis Schaeffer said, the unbeliever is a person who's got his feet firmly planted in midair. If he were to think seriously about his life for 2 seconds, he would know. Great despair. So you just don't think. Press the gas a little bit more, turn the internet on and go crazy, turn the TV louder, worship the gods of nature, take care of the animals, anything to give meaning to our life, whatever it happens to be, who cares? Because see, we're all going to that lane. And this is where many people we will meet this week are to see it in their eyes. And if you ask them, if they were talking to any serious question, ask them, what do you think happens after you die? Then you get everything. Well, we'll go to the beach. If you read Zola, that's what that novel ends up with. He didn't die, he just went to the beach and had a party. But they made it. It's fiction. But just ask the person, anything like that. Where have you been? What are you asking questions like that for? No one knows. The reason why I stress this is because we cannot be neutral. There are entities, demonic powers that want to destroy you. Amen. In fact, Paul the Apostle, or this guy's talking to someone who's walking in victory. Listen, he writes to the Thessalonians in chapter 2. But since we have been torn away from you, brothers, for such a short time in person, not in heart, though, we endeavor the more eagerly and with great desire to see you face to face, because we wanted to come to you, I call again and again, but Satan hindered us. Didn't Paul have enough faith to say, cast Satan out? But Satan hindered him again and again and again. He couldn't come. I mean, the conclusion here is Job is blameless. He had done nothing to deserve this. But see, God is more than a cosmic bellhop who just wants to bless us, but he can't because we do not have enough faith. No, God brings calamity as well. He brings adversity as well. He brings bad days, and bad days are used by God so we can have comfort for others. The only way we're going to be able to help others is to suffer. Because with that suffering, we are oblivious. What is your problem? Can't you get it? See? There is a time to mourn, a time to laugh. And when we have those bad days, it's to give thanks in all things. For this is the will of God concerning us. And God may be putting you through the mill so you can help others who will go through some of the things. How much has my spirit, and I hope yours too, has been helped by Janet Gurry in her emails. And even in the midst of grief over her daughter's untimely death, she's finding some comfort, some peace. And that encourages me, and Paul and Lisa Hoffman over Chris's death, same deal. You can think of others who have gone through difficulty and they persevere. And this is a great encouragement to our faith. In all of his troubles, he never cursed God. He comes close to blaspheming, but he never curses God. And his feelings are never sinful. And he's honest. So I say at the very end, remember the promises of Christ to walk with us through the valley of suffering. I will never leave you nor forsake you. And let this percolate through your mind. It's maybe as Christians, we know the difference between a Thanksgiving dinner and a McDonald's happy meal. That's a big difference. Spoke food. A happy meal can never touch a Thanksgiving dinner. Among friends and family that love us and care about us, it's good. I hope that you will open up your heart to God's grace and forgiveness. Father, I thank you for not being busy with us, for not working.